On the first Sunday in March of our centennial year, death took the 19th Governor General. George Vanier was 78. Paul-Émile Cardinal Léger, the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Montreal, celebrated Requiem Mass at the state funeral in Ottawa.
It is the old Canadian family which is mourning today. May the prayer of him who has entered into peace, light, and the rest of God obtain for our country the grace to live a destiny of peace. And as the road ahead will be long and difficult, may the Lord give us the strength to practice that gentleness, which is the virtue of the strong, who respect in everything the requirements of justice and of fraternity, those sure foundations of the stability of peoples. Amen.
During the service, Archbishop Plourde paid Governor General Vanier this tribute.
What impressed me most in the late Governor General's life was that he was completely dedicated to his tasks and duties because he believed enough in a set of values to be guided by them. And all he did seemed to be motivated by a cordial charity for his fellow men. From a Christian point of view, these three fundamental attitudes correspond to three fundamental virtues: faith, hope, and charity. And I would say that the late Governor General was a true Christian.
General Vanier had served Canada in many fields, not the least of these as a soldier. The Chief of Staff, General Jean Allard, paid tribute to an old comrade.
Well, it is a very sad occasion for all the armed forces, because, as you know, General Vanier is the Commander-in-Chief of the armed forces, and he was a great man. He was a very inspiring man. He was a man of vision, and he was a great servant of Canada.
Following the state funeral in Ottawa, the Viceregal train took General Vanier's body to Quebec City. When the train arrived in Palais Station, many prominent Canadians were on hand to pay their respects. This is the voice of former Prime Minister Louis Saint-Laurent.
I was, of course, shocked, as were all the Canadians who shared with me the admiration and affection that was quite generally extended to him throughout Canada, you know. But I think that the end came in his case as he would have wished it to come. He realized that he had finished his voyage in this world, and I think that he was quite prepared to face his Creator and to accept what his Creator would extend to him with the same readiness and the same feelings that inspired him when he accepted everything we Canadians asked him.
General Vanier's body was placed in the crypt of the Basilica of Notre Dame de Quebec, the oldest parish church in Canada. General Vanier was the Queen's representative here from 1959 to 1967. He was the second Governor General to die in office and the second native Canadian to hold the post. His successor, also a Canadian, was named early in April by Prime Minister Pearson. Roland Michener, the 67-year-old former Conservative Member of Parliament and Speaker of the House, had been serving since 1964 as Canada's High Commissioner to India. Prime Minister Pearson spoke of hockey at the swearing-in ceremonies.
We have no doubt, sir, that you will meet the challenges of this great office with the same skill and wisdom and calm good humor that you have met the other challenges that have faced you throughout your varied career. Even if I may add, going far back into the years when I used to pass a puck to you on the right wing or whether it's the left wing and you were expected to score a goal.
The 20th Governor General of Canada, Roland Michener, spoke very briefly at that time.
Already we have been encouraged by the good wishes of many of those whom we shall serve, and we hope to earn and deserve such encouragement from all. In any event, Prime Minister, I shall not fail through lack of effort nor of will to serve.
At year's end, Canada lost another distinguished son with the death in London, England, on December 30th of Vincent Massey, the first Canadian to be named the Queen's representative in this country. He served in the post from 1952 to 1959. His body was flown back to Canada for a state funeral in the Anglican Cathedral in Ottawa. During the service, his brother, the celebrated actor Raymond Massey, read part of the rite.
Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.
Archbishop Howard H. Clark, Anglican primate of all Canada, paid this tribute to the former Governor General.
He knew that he inherited much, not only in material wealth, but also in the rich bicultural traditions of our land. He cherished the customs which were and are a part of our heritage, and when we were inclined to forget them, he encouraged their revival. And yet this did not make him a reactionary, yearning for a yesterday which can never come again. Instead, they made him a pioneer. It was significant that he took as the title of one of his books, What's Past is Prologue. Thus, he was not afraid to become our first Canadian ambassador and later our first Canadian Governor General in such a service, as also as the Chancellor of a great university and the Chairman of a commission which for the first time involved our nation in the development of the arts. He was leading Canada to a richer and a freer national life.
The newly named Governor General, Roland Michener, also spoke of his predecessor in office, Vincent Massey.
By the courtesy and tact with which he applied his great intellectual gifts to his duties, he laid the fears of those who had protested the appointment of a Canadian and firmly established the succession of Canadians to this office. Mr. Massey's service as Governor General was the longest of any, being over 7 years, and of great distinction. His interest in people took him to every part of Canada, from the outports in Newfoundland to tiny Haida villages in the Queen Charlotte Islands and remote Eskimo settlements in the Arctic. Like my wife and me, he had very warm feelings for Quebec and its people and liked nothing better than to be amongst them in the official residence in the Citadel. He gave his patronage and encouragement to many who were engaged in charitable, artistic, and athletic activities. In his speeches and writings, he gave strong and eloquent expression to Canadian aspirations and thoughts in a way which established him in his office as a true representative of Canada without diminishing his effective representation of Her Majesty the Queen.
During the centennial year, Canada had many distinguished visitors, but none of them created a bigger impact one way or another than did Charles de Gaulle, President of France. His much-heralded arrival at Quebec City was treated as a state visit to a sovereign nation and produced his now famous Free Quebec speech. The ill-timed remark almost broke diplomatic relations between our two countries and brought prompt reaction from Prime Minister Pearson.
Canadians do not need to be liberated. Indeed, many thousands of Canadians gave their lives in two world wars in the liberation of France and other European countries. Canada will remain united and will reject any effort to destroy her unity.
As expected, John Diefenbaker also had something to say about General de Gaulle's utterance.
To begin with, de Gaulle believed that he, in fact, was the leader of one of the nations in the two-nation theory which the Pearson government has been espousing and giving qualified assistance to during the last 4 years. He concluded that Canada was indeed two nations. He's found out in the last few days, in consequence of that wrongful assumption, that the Canadian people as a whole follow the course which we in the Conservative Party advocated and consistently supported, namely that this is one Canada.
Despite his apparent disenchantment with General de Gaulle's performance during his curtailed visit to Canada, Prime Minister Pearson still took time to speak of Canada's friendship with France.
It has been and remains the strong purpose of the government of Canada to foster that friendship. I hope that my discussions later this week with General de Gaulle will demonstrate that this purpose is one which he shares.
There were countless other voices in the news in Canada in 1967, among them these three who seek the leadership of the Liberal Party at 1968's party convention. One of them, a newcomer to politics, named Justice Minister in 1967, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, had this to say when being sworn into the cabinet.
It's a good job, but perhaps there's not that much future in it, but I think all portfolios are difficult. It depends what happens when the particular incumbent is there. And there no doubt are a few difficult ones lined up now for justice. But be true for any other department, wouldn't it?
Another of the bright young men seeking the leadership spoke on his appointment as Registrar General, John Turner.
I think that eventually we can contemplate sooner than later a consumer affairs division whereby we will coordinate, I would hope, policy as a watchdog for the consumer and the Canadian government. This would have to do with the quality of goods that people buy, making clear the choices that people have before them, making sure that the price they pay is clear to them, that the interest that they pay is clear to them, and all that sort of thing. So it basically is a job to protect the small investor and the average consumer in Canada. The average consumer includes every Canadian.
Another looming large in the race for leadership of the Liberal Party, the Honorable Paul Martin, Canada's hard-working Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs. As spokesman for the government on international matters, Mr. Martin early in 1967 told of the latest Canadian proposals for peace in Vietnam.
It would be a development based on a stage-by-stage basis and represents in its total the provisions of the Geneva Agreements. Now, in a matter of this sort, there's no sense raising false hopes. I don't believe in the present situation this or any other proposal is acceptable. But I do not take the view that we can't envisage a time, and perhaps sooner than we think, when proposals like this and others would be the subject of consideration and possible action.
Mr. Martin also spoke of Canada's possible participation in a peace force in that troubled Southeast Asian nation.
If peace comes, then I'm sure there will have to be an international presence. It might be a United Nations presence, or an Asian presence, or a Geneva Powers presence. And I said that in that eventuality, I would certainly recommend to my colleagues, if we were invited to take part in such an operation, that we should do so.
Have we taken preparatory steps towards this now?
Yes, we have been engaged for some time.
Because Canada celebrated her 100th birthday in 1967, many people from many lands visited this country for the first time. We hope they took home glowing recollections of this great land. We hope they can speak of Canada, as did British Commonwealth Secretary Herbert Bowden, for this is the way we'd wish them to think of us.
Commonwealth Secretary, I am delighted to have this chance to salute you on July the 1st, when in all parts of your vast country, Canadians will be rejoicing on this the 100th birthday of Confederation. Canada today is a monument to the work of men of many races, in particular of the two founding races. We here in Britain are proud to have been so intimately involved in your history. It was at Westminster 100 years ago that the Confederation which you now celebrate first became a reality. But our association, of course, goes back long before then. And we like to think that you inherited from Britain democratic institutions, a certain style of government and a tradition of civil liberties on which you have built so surely. Britain and Canada now work together in many of the vital forums of international relations, but more especially in our unique Commonwealth family relationship. And we are full of admiration for the invaluable peacekeeping role which you have played on behalf of the United Nations since the last World War. Our relationship is, I feel, essentially one of like-minded human beings bound together by a common history and experience, by bonds of trade, by comradeship in arms in war, and by cooperation in peace. This relationship will long continue to be an inspiration for Britain, and I hope for Canada too. I was lucky last month to be able to visit Canada for the first time, albeit much too briefly. I got a glimpse of your great country, which has whetted my appetite, and I look forward to a longer visit soon. Like many other Britons, I was profoundly impressed by Expo 67, which in both its national and international character, and with its splendid theme of man and his world, symbolized so successfully Canada's achievements and Canada's aspirations. We in Britain send you heartfelt congratulations on this glorious centennial occasion and our warmest wishes for Canada's tremendous future.